The question was, objects without us, exclamation mark, or something. Of course, quite loud in here, isn't it? I have to speak quite loud. So I proposed the question, objects without us, as a way of thinking about what it might mean to think of objects without humans. Because all of the, and this isn't really my idea, it's lots of kind of current thinking around. No, it's not. No, Plato is obsessed with humans. But yeah,
is the tree falling in the forest? Did it fall?
The discourse around that. Hold on, a bit of background. Discourse around objects is often taken up about their effect on people. So if you think about Marxist critique or commodity fetishism, it's about the capacity or ability of an object or object relations to come back and control us, and us not control objects. But what if we remove ourselves from that kind of relation, and we think about what objects do without us, or without necessarily any affect on us? Do they speak to one another? This is, again, Marx's critique is about the problem of objects speaking to each other and not us, alienating us. But that still is based around us. Like, we're left out.
I've got a vision of Toy Story in my head. Is that the right vision to have, or have I got it wrong?
Toy Story, I don't know. Can you explain it?
Because of all these objects talking to each other in a film.
Toys.
And they're not humans.
They're
anthropomorphized, or they're made into human figures.
That's precisely the opposite problem.
Ubiquitous computing is kind of going in that area, and there's a horrible project that I was a part of and couldn't believe and had to leave, called BOP. And it was having these little creatures that watch what's going on with your life while you're sitting at the computer, and it tells you what the temperature's like and what the movement is. And what it's doing really is narking to its fellow ones as to what you're doing and working out what you do. So they're big brother, but as little creatures. But they don't talk to you. You have to observe what they're identifying. So you can be a voyeur.
No.
But there isn't a conversation.
So in a way,
we're spying on each other.
Yeah, they're evil.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Objects without us, wouldn't that be nature?
No.
But they don't have language, though.
Because is there a distinction between natural objects and cultural objects?
What is their value when we take the I'm thinking of, like, you know, there's a lot of artist projects that invest in building frameworks for things to happen, so they don't have to make decisions. So there's, you know, you might have a system of relations where something random will happen without our decision or judgment. And that's all very exciting, isn't it? Things is kind of removing us, and we don't know what's going to happen. So, maybe. So there might be some extension, but that seems kind of also in need of some development in terms of thinking, you know, because maybe there's other ways of doing that. Maybe those kind of half interesting processes.
I've heard of one way of doing it. One way of removing ourselves from
there's no way, it's kind of pseudo way, isn't it? I mean, we can think, maybe we can think it, we might not be able to do it. Mm.
But nature can remove us from objects and object from us through disaster. So earthquake or tsunami can make new grounds, and then object is the only thing that's left.
Yeah.
Because they were amazingly, and in New Orleans, seeing cars as dead,
yeah,
and that's me being putting personality and human aspects on it. They weren't. Mm. So I think that can happen. And by the way, they rust and decay and into something else.
But I guess the whole idea is that we don't, but still in saying the car becomes dead, you're anthropomorphising the car.
I said I am. I said I am going then. Yeah.
Sorry.
Those objects exist in a new surrounding without humans, and they take on different roles. But nature will still, it's not for humans, it's nature that starts to make things happen by growing over it or farming it.
You mean the ruin of the city of John?
Yeah. But also, what do we learn from the object that we might not anticipate or might not fully be able to capture? That might be particular to what their cycle between the object relations in terms of their own particular histories. That might not be anything to do with that. So how do you open up that information? How do you capture that knowledge?
Was that not the bit in your question that you can't? Because in order for the objects to exist without us, the knowledge that's produced by that encounter has to remain outside.
Yeah, maybe.
Our systems of capture. Otherwise, it automatically brings it back into its use value in relation to us again. These places, there's these blind spots, you just have to say that there's something happening there. That,
well, it's like the criticism of ethnographies, isn't it? In the way that you affect by observing. And of course, you know, this comes back to sounding like a kind of ethnographic kind of research study where you observe, you watch things, look for things, and of course you're looking at yourself in some way. So how do you do, you know, how's that happen without running into all those problems, I suppose? Because I think objects probably do have something of their own.
There's a triggering, I can't remember the title for it, but last year one of the students, his final show was to create objects that could morph. And they were evolutionary. And the two things they could do is to change colour and change shape. They were created by humans. And they were under control of human in the electric, the supply of power to keep going. So they weren't their own world at all. But they had performed without human intervention. And it's really quite a lot of steps on from algorithms. And so there's something, I believe, in there. But I couldn't go any further. I don't know the next step because it was triggered at the beginning.
But also, when we were talking about the manufacturing process, and I think, well, actually, manufacturing errors or the machine going wrong, is that the machine's agency?
Yeah,
is that to
say
that it's decision to try and make something of its own?
Yeah.
And I quite like that sense of when it goes a bit wrong, the object's deciding to make its own object.
But there's a difficulty there for me with the word agency, because that's our word. Run through all the discussions I've had actually at the moment, is this question that we keep coming back to is what is the object and how we, but anyway, that's a slightly different thing. But I think there is something really interesting in that you're saying when something goes wrong. But in order to think of it, I think we have to stay with wrong somehow, or it's not right the word, but if you give agency to it, there's that romanticism of the ghost in the machine thing that then
it's like,
falls back
it's like
into
a spark, isn't it? That suddenly you create a life or something, it's like a mistake, and it's suddenly sparking off something.
And I mean, it's not with objects, but Close Encounters of the Third Kind and the ESP of everybody using different mediums to send a message. I could quite believe that the things that were made last year that evolved could get into an ESP that's making that flat top to meet the arches. So there's something in there. There's also that thing of over periods of time where they haven't met, they haven't done anything, and yet people are still going towards the same thing. I suppose Leonardo, seeing from a helicopter's very good imagination. But it, for me, it's also working in that area where he was designing an object that could allow him to go up there without knowing anything about aerodynamics in a conventional way. He was pre the object he designed, and pre, even more importantly, the object that allowed him to see as he saw. So that fertility of imagination, I think, you know, when you see hieroglyphics that have got.
Is it, are you talking about a kind of zeitgeist? Where
a zeitgeist, yeah.
Like, where all of a sudden, like, you know, they did that experiment and there's islands in off Japan with the monkeys finding coconuts, didn't they? And they all seem to find them at the same time.
Yeah. So this. I mean,
but do not objects have, do objects have imagination?
I'm sure there must be some out there.
Because it seems to me that we're talking about, we have to have the imagination for the objects to exist at the moment. Whereby if we say, if we take ourselves out of the equation, and we take language out of the equation, we take all that sense of self out of the equation, and we put the object out there as like saying, okay, has the object got language, the object got an imagination, what's the relationship between objects? Do we objectify it by saying, asking that question even? So,
I'm not about to try and answer it, but I did, you did make me think of something, which was the interest maybe around abstraction that been talking about. But abstraction is doesn't allow you in, does it? It doesn't necessarily speak the language that you might be used to. Okay, we know about formalism and different, but abstraction is a kind of opacity. Is that where allowing an object to speak? Is that?
I think it goes back to I keep thinking, what is object? And because I'm working so closely with people that are now working with things that I can't hold it. It just appears. And technology has got to a stage where they're nearly giving birth to stuff that can do its own thing. But it's like having an early mutation or something, and it hasn't got to where possibly
it could go. But in that sense, what you're doing is you're objectifying the object.
Yeah.
Whereby we have to subjectify the object.
Exactly, so that we have to know what the object is. And if I'm removing nature, and I'm removing any of my subjectiveness, how do I define or understand what it could be doing? I can't do that.
You can't objectify outside of, because once you are in the realm of objectness, then you're stuck without subject.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know the answer is. I don't see how you can. Or I haven't learned.
Yes.
I was hoping I'd get it here today.
But there's a huge difference between found objects, made object to perform, an object made to perform an act of some sort, a piece of nature, whatever it is, that we're classifying object in a very broad basket, putting them all in together.
Sorry,
only for the notes. Could you just say that again? Because I think that's quite a key point that you made. Think about object, subject. Can you? If you can't, it's fine.
I've got no idea what
that's saying. It's the disappearance of subject.
It's part of the causation.
In our discussion of objects. And trying to find a kind of a subjectless realm of object. The disappearance of the subject makes it very difficult to speak to.
That sounds right.
That's the mind, that's the thing I can't escape.
Yeah.
That's the
cultural.
It does.
I think nature's. Lots of the sentimentality of our culture is predicated on precisely that.
No, forget us. If it exists without us, it will still exist.
We're not needed.
At all. No. We're defunct.
There was something before us, there'd be something else.
Yeah, no consequence.
You know, we're as relevant as what became before and what comes out.
Yeah, which goes back to the earthquake.
Yeah, but it's more than just nature.
Because the object realm can be mind independent. Mm. Yeah. It's beyond, it's further.
Mm. Yeah.
It exists outside of us. That's why when a tree falls down, it does make a noise. Mm. Nobody has to be there to hear it for it to make a loud crash.
And the ocean's got some mighty good stuff in there.
Which is really, it's a conversation about realism, isn't it?
It is a conversation about realism.
A conversation about realism.
Yeah.
And how we're only allowing objects to have the accessible characteristics. Subjectively accessible characteristics. It's kind of anti-realism. It's an illusion.
So
I'm not sure whether it's such a difficult jump to say actually things are real, and they do exceed.
I think. Yeah.
The qualities that we.
I think they do.
That we can subjectively
access.
The question isn't whether they're real or not.
Objects without us.
But I think it is a question about whether they are.
Yeah,
what?
But it's also
a question, you're objectifying the object.
The reason that I raise this kind of issue about what is an object is that if you kind of think about it, what our culture tells us is that before the word, everything is without form.
Hmm.
So the object only exists as a bounded thing once we've brought it into language.
Once we're given it
yes, exactly. So without us, there is no tree, there is no forest, there is no noise.
Predicated on.
Yeah, absolutely. All of these things are facets of our culture, of the world. Right? That's our problem. So attempt to take us out of it, the object actually neutrally disappears. That's the problem.
You see, I read it the way around.
I
think the object disappears once it's only the characteristics that we can subjectively access. The object disappears.
I think the object
comes into being but, at the moment that we can't subjectively access.
Right.
When it has its own object.
The trouble is that we don't see the object, we see ourselves. So how do we see objects without seeing ourselves?
Well, do objects in that sense see themselves as distinct one from another? Or vast formless continuity?
I don't know. I mean,
an object.
But objects are more interesting than the subjectivities that we project onto.
Potentially, yes. But what is it we are limiting? Or delimiting?
Well, that's the thing. That might be something to explore.
If we shift the relationship to a more empathetic relationship with object, or we become object. If we speak ourselves as object and not speak ourselves as subject talking about object, then we can begin to actually construct a language of object. So we become an object in order to begin to learn to speak
Are we not just speaking ourselves in the vocabulary that we have chosen,
We haven't chosen it, though, have we?
We're
positioned within it, so therefore we're already constructed a subject.
But isn't this also going back to time? I was thinking black hole.
That's one. I'll write that down. Thinking of black hole.
Talking about reality. It's just a black hole.
This is what it's called.
Because that big thing of going up in a Sputnik and then going up in a rocket and then going and finding Mars could be and seeing we've got sun, they've got sun, and what do we do? And then going a bit lower and people are sending things up just over as little experiments. Lots of people are doing that. So what is that?
It's subjugation, it's the subject. Everything that one does in that way is subjecting the object
But we're just saying we are the ultimate for doing that.
Yeah, of course. We're the pioneers.
But we do.
But we do that.
How
do we? Should we? Do we have the right to?
But you're putting us back into the question now, because what we're trying to do.
No, I just asked that now. Then I start again.
Okay, so take us at the equation.
Okay, yeah.
We're finished.
Okay, so throw us into space.
Yeah, we're gone. Okay. We just.
And we just start again.
Yeah.
So we're doing now.
Finished.
Reconstructing language.
Yeah. Well, we've constructed it so much.
So, you know, this point about, you know, this question can really maybe only be addressed. Another way of saying it is, what would objects be without language?
Which is where we started.
Yeah.
So we start with objects without us, but actually it's object. Is it the question of objects without language?
Nearly. Then you have to define what language is, whether language is to do with being spoken, or language to do with touch, language to do with relationships between things.
And we're going back to your thing that you don't want to have happen.
Yes, yeah, so that's before. So what was before language? It wasn't object.
No, we meant object, and how we communicate object.
I don't think we can decide whether objects are whether objects are external or not. Either. I think that sets up the problem straight away, because that puts us back in position of power of object completely. I think what's more interesting is the what escapes us from object. It's that seems to me guarantees its autonomy from us. Rather than us saying, I'm going to think objects without us. That seems to me to be impossible because of that correlational bind, that bind that we can't escape. Mm-hmm. Because you're thinking subject, think about an object.
But there's nothing wrong with thinking just possible.
No, and I like this thought experiment, it's really interesting. But actually it seems to me that what's unaccessible in object is the thing that, for me, that guarantees its autonomy, because that is external to our decision. Mm. And us being the person that decides. The agent.
But if you imagine yourself as a rock,
no, I wouldn't want to do all that.
But if I'm not you, I imagine myself as a rock.
Are you convincing to yourself?
You're off the you can't speak, except what's happened. He's gone mute. That's
yeah,
it.
But there are many humans that are mute. And you can hear me now.
And some people would believe that rocks could speak.
And of course they can, and they don't. And they don't.
But they have effect. I mean, a volcano has some effect.
What happens to us without objects? Like if we took some angels. And I remember thinking this morning as I was kind of coming along, well, what am I going to do about that tortoise breast bug? You ever held a tortoise breast bug? What a strange object that is. And that's what you stand with on the brink of the unknown. So in a sense, you brought us to that tortoise breastbone moment to say, we don't know, but there is something, an unknown, and it's there, but we don't know it, and we know we don't know it.
That sounds like American politics.
No, we moved on from that moment. We realised that Obama's kind of moved us away from the neo-compositions.
As soon as a child is born, it becomes part of performances. It's not pure. It will be, I know, it's little mind may be pure, but the body is going through interactions.
The body has knowledge at birth.
And therefore it's learning at every moment. It learns to cry more.
But the body of a flower or body of a... It depends on what kind of object in mind, because if I'm a rock, then that's got a very different history to a tree. So if we're trying to conceptualise object as something that's like a tree or a rock, is that what we're doing, or are we saying the objects are...
Couldn't you imagine...
Not us.
I know you imagined you and you did a really good impersonation of a rock.
I thought you can't think that.
But can't you imagine you as an object?
I'm an object, actually.
Yeah, there's, because we're talking as if we are just subject. In the moment where we're all going to become object, pure immanence.
We're just, this is the relation of objects.
But we only become objects in relationship to another person who subjects us. The reason we, the only reason,
all I'm saying is you could have sat there and said that I'm now an object.
No, because I'm in a group here with people. If I sat on the top of a mountain with no one else around me, I could sit in exactly the same way, have exactly the same feeling. With a very, very slight difference, actually, in that feeling, is that you're looking at me because it's somehow performative. But if I take myself away from this space, and it's exactly the same feeling on top of a mountain, I can still say to myself, I'm an object. What's and actually, at the same time, by saying that, I recognise that immediately I'm a subject, because I said it to myself.
And that's the bind that counts.
And that's never going to go away.
But there is a great thing in humour.
Yes, sir.
Because that's around subject-object relationships. So the moment of humour around people commonly is when the person is seen as an object. Yeah. And there is a really odd thing.
So I was wondering if it would be of any use to throw in the kind of the Freudian idea of fetish as well as the Marxist one. And it would be a very kind of sorry past for me to characterise it. But basically involves a kind of an object that doesn't exist. So you've got your fetish object, and it's castration anxiety because you realise suddenly that your mum doesn't have her willing, right? So your dad must have cut it off. And so you kind of grab onto this because it's a comfort object to replace not any willy, he says, very special willy, the mum's willy. So this notion of our relationship to the object is predicated on nothing, in a sense. And I wondered whether that might be an interesting way of rattling around this area. That all of our understandings at the moment of the object, in a sense, are predicated on actually knowing, well, particularly doesn't that mean knowing that there is no such thing as that object there, and that the object needs to be put in place to keep the subject in place.
And there's a difference between something called knowing and something called sensing. So does a child before language know or does it sense? And that moment entry into knowing is very different from an entry into a sensing something. So that's the interest I have, is between that sense of ourselves in the world, as objects in the world, literally, and knowing we are in the world by objectifying the other. And it's a different entry into language.
I'm relating what you're saying to kind of this potentially new arena, that kind of the difference, as I understand it from you, between sensing and knowing is knowing has entered into culture as a kind of a hard, not a knowledge, hard knowledge as it's referred to. Whereas sensing is still a kind of process of interaction rather than sort of the excrescence of that interaction into somehow knowledge.
Knowledge is so much tied in with language, which is tied in with the discourse of objectifying the other.
Yeah, exactly.
The sensing is something about the relationship between us.
Yeah.
At the moment,
the
I
process.
Guess, yeah, so if I'm a bit kinder to you, then there'll be a different sense between us, rather than being slightly hard through my words by my mouth. So it's that sensing, a relationship with objects, that's different from knowing objects. I'm interested in.
Is that... you know, kindness to objects. Yeah. That refers to this whole thing. This is the title of this thing is about object abuse, isn't it? Or it has that in the title anyway, in one form or another, it says object abuse, and it seems kind of important that it connects to how we respect objects.
Yeah, if you look at
and their integrity.
Yeah, and therefore ourselves, because the sensing self, being the kind self, knowing self, sometimes being an unkind self.
Yeah.
And the word kind is quite, you know, kind of what is also there.
Well, seeing beyond yourself.
Something like that, but it's seeing yourself by seeing.
This is
sensing beyond yourself.
Yeah. I just want to get the end of golf balls.
Walk.
Can I
just walk.
Pass it on? Yes. No, it's just because I'm doing this.
Very good.
it further, Jess.
Yeah, I'm just asking. Peter Pan statue in the way people have stroked the creatures has brought completely different patina to anything else. And if you watch the people that stroke it, often they're people that are going back into their memory. Because they're not little children washing up and seeing a snail or a mouse. Mm. It's an adult that's going and doing that. Mm. And that sense, that statue is drawing people in to do this. And whether it's nostalgia, whether it's just beauty, I don't know what it is, it's a wonderful day and you can see some more people just do that. I have no idea, but it is fascinating watching people.
It's that real sense of relationship with something other than another. Is that the sense of relationship? Rather than knowing where we look at it and take a photograph of it, paint it, and
or own it.
Yeah.
Is that because that's always reductive, that kind of process? You reduce it to knowledge.
Yes.
You don't allow it its excess.
Just
allow its excess.
Yeah.
See, that's what I think is that it's that excess.
It's that way.
That might be its autonomy.
Yeah. So it's that opening out, becoming the rock in order to begin to make yourself vulnerable.
And also, open to others to do that without thinking that bloke's going to think I'm a
bastard. Or hit you on the face.
Yeah.
The foot of Saint, the statue of Saint Rita di Cascia in a church in Rome, has the same patina from years of people kissing it, women kissing it, to conceive, for she is the saint of lost causes.
Mm. And the Blarney Stone in Ireland.
And I wonder if that's a kind of different patina.
I think, that's a request and understanding. I think watching the other, there seems to be a sort of abstracted look of just doing it.
Yeah.
It's in the right place at the right time.
But that's what we were saying about abstraction, isn't it?
Mm. Completely.
You encounter something you don't fully understand.
Yeah.
But
it
you
draws
still,
you in, yeah.
Something happens.
Mm. Well, it's the abstraction that sucks you in, isn't it? It's the
kind of
thing that...
Yeah.
It's the thing that allows the thing to come into...
But it can also repel you. It can also stop you. Because you can... It's that thing about, not sharing... Literally not sharing language.
Mm.
When someone speaks a different language, it doesn't always draw you in. It can push you away.
It can repel.
When someone doesn't share your belief system, belief system is an object, isn't it?
Mm.
That might...
Well, that language thing, if you're on a train and going through Europe, you have different languages coming through. You don't necessarily feel a time change, but you have to change your watch at some point. And the weather's changing, and you're just sitting on the same old train. And you just know you're on a train journey, so you fall into it. But if somebody had not told you you were going to go on a train, and they blindfolded you and stuck you on the train, you'd still get all these sensations that are going on. But that is still a journey that you can understand. It may be difficult and frightening or exciting or lovely, but it's taking you out of your known area, going back to the rock.
This is the thing, you no longer see yourself.
Mm.
That's the point.
But just by being
this
blindfolded
from seeing yourself
and put on the train in the wrong place, I still would know.
Don't recognise it.
Yeah.
I feel that there's a strand of our conversation which is kind of less explored, that comes really from that question about is that a different patina? So someone's made a kind of Peter Pan statue or kind of a patron saint of lost causes, and the kind of patina is about recurrent, repeated returns to the object, human returns to the object. Think then of the object which is created by us, but is intended to move beyond us and away from us, like a rocket that we send out there with kind of information about us. Or like the statue of Ozymandias, which is meant to outlast us and look on my works, ye mighty, in despair, I've moved so far beyond you, I've become a god. Right? Forget that they then say it's tumbled down, quite dead as we do. But there is an idea of that we do actually create objects to go on journeys with that.
There's a mountain range somewhere where they've built this humongous clock, this amazing, huge construction. and it's built to last for infinite time. And the notion is that you have to go and visit, you have to make a pilgrimage to this place, wind up this ridiculous mechanism, you know, walk to the top of this thing and wind this other thing, and suddenly it'll start ticking again and read to the correct time. And it's this idea of that people have to go and visit this place for it to sort of exist as well. Not sure why.
Did you invent this?
Say again?
Did you invent this?
Maybe I did. No, I didn't. No,
it's scary. It sounds, real. It sounds like a story. That
yeah, that's what I thought when I first read it. I thought, is this real? Is this actual?
It's a 10,000 year clock, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. 10,000 years.
And you have to interact with it, so you have to have
I believe so, from what I remember.
Does it stop?
Stop's a strong word.
Is the winding up because it stops?
Pauses, yeah, or it's almost in limbo.
And what happens to time when it's stopped? Is it like if you were on a train, this train journey, but you go over to France and you lose an hour, and if you get on the train going back and you gain an hour and you keep going,
I think it's autonomous.
This is something Tim Mitchell said.
I think are
you no longer in time?
Actually, there's a thing, project that's been going on for years with Long Player with Jim Finer.
Yes.
And having that just the pestle and mortar type musical instrument, and people are just the mechanics. And the pestle and mortar are it.
Yes.
So that is object that has. We are subservient to object. We do not make sound or speak. We enable it to talk by performing as mechanical.
Yes, we can. Thanks. It's full of anxiety to think that we can't completely own objects anyway.
Probably name of that.
No,
yeah.
Those objects were enough. Jem Finer. Finer. Not being Caroline.